I don't claim to know what's going on at the heart of the narco economy, and I think Al doesn't know either. And we're both groping here. I've just come back from Alaska, and you don't see, all you see of the mountains is like the bottom 200 feet, and if you're lucky. And sometimes the cloud level is at sea level and you see nothing, and sometimes it lifts to about 1,000. And Al's book really lifted the cloud level in a way that will never go back down. We know so much more. But you know, you're saying it, the CIA impacted on a market, but really at the end of World War II, there was very little market. And the reason I attach so much importance to those figures is that we see how war, in effect, created the market. Burma had always grown opium, but it only began to export really when opium became illegal in 1906, and they were exporting it to Thailand, and the British turned a blind eye, I think, here. They outlawed the production of opium, but they continued to tax the Shan states at the same rate as they had before. In other words, the Shan states had to go on exporting the opium in order to be able to pay the taxes. So that meant the British were clean, but they were counting on the opium to support the colony of Burma indirectly. There was virtually no market, global trade in opium, and I think it could have stayed that way. The mafia was destroyed in Italy, and Al Bocoi's book shows how we actually imported American mafia into Italy to help the Italian right fight communism in first Sicily and then mainland Italy. And so I don't think we were so much impact. You know, your statistics are very compelling when you're talking about these millions of peasants, but I think you're reaching to the current state of the market. There weren't millions of peasants when this began. There was a far smaller number. And I think, you know, obviously there are many factors that go into this, but I think I, more than you, attach a lot of importance to key decisions made by very small people in London and Washington and France, which then creates a situation which gets beyond anyone's control. And I'm sort of sorry that one of Jerry's slides at the beginning, which had all those people from Wall Street who went to Washington, at the very top of the list was Frank Wisner. And he arrived with the title of Office for Central European Activities or something. He was, in fact, heading up a covert operations arm, which, like himself, the top people were giving up big salaries in New York to come down to much smaller salaries. Mrs. Wisner said these were people so rich they could afford to work for Washington, meaning that the salary wasn't why they were coming. I think they were very invested in thinking geopolitically about communism versus capitalism, and thinking that if we're not careful, we're going to lose all of Asia to communism. What ally do we have there? Well, we have the capitalists. They have the KMT, the Kuomintang, the Chinese Nationalists, were not just an army in Burma. They were a bunch of secret societies in every city in Southeast Asia. And traditionally, they had supported themselves by the local, they were triads that supported themselves through opium. And now they weren't going to get opium anymore from Yunnan because the Chinese Communists had taken Yunnan. And I think they consciously decided to get another source of KMT opium to beef up the Kuomintang in Taiwan and in Southeast Asia. And Taiwan and Hong Kong became very big, huge in this trade, but they hadn't been. Taiwan never was until these decisions were made, I think, in Washington. Now, rather than go on and on about this, I think I should let you come back and respond to that.